Good morning, everybody. My name is Neil Risk. I'm a master's student at the University of Guelph, where my advisor is Dr. Claudia Wagner-Riddle. And this morning I'm going to be presenting my presentation, which is a comparison of simultaneous soil profile nitrous oxide concentrations and surface nitrous oxide flux measurements over winter and at spring thaw in an agricultural soil. So thanks to Mario for setting the stage for me quite well. So as he mentioned, freeze-thaw cycles in soils cause heightened emissions of nitrous oxide from those soils. And now concerning specifically the mechanisms that are causing these heightened emissions, there's some issues and questions associated with the research. In terms of issues, one of the main problems is that the mechanisms behind them are not fully understood. They work simultaneously and in combination, and there's a lack of in-situ data. That is to say that a lot of the prior work was done in laboratory setting. In terms of major questions, one of the the main questions is still, is the nitrous oxide we're seeing at the surface that's being emitted, the physical release of over winter trapped nitrous oxide that was previously produced and built up in the profile, or is it the new production at thaw? And that leads to the question, well, what proportion of the surface flux is due to the physical release of previously produced nitrous oxide, and what proportion is the new production? Now, from those questions, I was able to outline a pair of objectives to help perhaps shed light on these questions. The first would be to compare timing of heightened nitrous oxide surface fluxes to changes in the soil profile, including water content, soil temperature, nitrous oxide concentrations. And the second is to estimate the storage of nitrous oxide in the soil profile over winter and compare changes in that storage to the nitrous oxide surface flux. So to answer those objectives, I carried out a field experiment at the Aurora Research Station in Ayres, Ontario from November 2010 to May 2011. And at the research station, my study area consisted of a 1.5 hectare agricultural plot that was managed using conventional tillage. The surface fluxes were monitored using the flux gradient methodology. Soil conditions were monitored in four profiles, so four replicates. Within those replicates, automated measurements were taken as half-hourly averages, and manual measurements were taken weekly over winter, but with increasing frequency approaching thaw. So, as I said, I had four replicates, and within each of those replicates, I had water content reflectometers, soil thermocouples, and soil gas probes at 5, 10, 15, 30, and 60 centimeters of depth. Soil gas probes had an additional probe at 5 centimeters at each replicate, and that was to help combat frost heave. So I felt that perhaps people would be curious as to what these gas probes entailed. So if you can see here on the left, we have a silicone tube that is attached to spaghetti tubing. So the silicone tube would be in the soil profile. It is permeable to gas, but not liquid. And then the spaghetti tubing is run to the surface where there is a stopcock. And by attaching a syringe, we're able to pull gas out of the silicone tube that would be in equilibrium with the soil atmosphere. And then those samples were transferred to vials and actually sent to the University of Manitoba for analysis. As I mentioned before, to measure the surface fluxes, the flux gradient methodology was employed. That involves measuring nitrous oxide concentrations at two heights above the surface. That's from each of these cups here you can see. And also measuring what is termed the friction velocity, or U star, from cup and sonic anemometers. So we can see in this equation here we have U star and we have delta C, which is the difference in concentrations between the two cups at heights Z2 and Z1. And the nice thing about this methodology is that it integrates over the area of the plot, so we have a large representative area. So moving on to the best part now, we're going to talk about the results. And we're going to look at my estimates for the soil nitrous oxide storage. And to do that, we're going to look at days 40 to 110. That's February 9th, 2011 to April 20th. And before we start looking at some graphs I have for you, we're going to look at how the storage estimates were calculated. So the first thing that needed to be done is we needed to break up the profile into layers that would be represented by the measurements I'm getting from the soil gas probes. As an example, from 0 to 7.5 centimeters, we would use the measurements from the 5-centimeter probes, the average of the two, from 7.5 to 12.5, the 10-centimeter probes, and so forth and so on, down to 70 centimeters, at which point the soil became very rich in clay, and it is, I argue that it's very unlikely that there would be substantial storage below that point. The next part would be to determine what percentages were solids, water, and ice in the soil, and that was done through the use of bulk density, volumetric water content, and field moisture measurements. And once those were obtained, you know that the remaining percent was air. And with all these, now you can calculate the storage by layer by multiplying the layer thickness by a unit area of a meter squared to get the volume, multiply that by what part of that volume was the air-filled pore space, and by the concentration in the representative probe. And through doing that, we have obtained this. So this is the storage by layer. And what should jump out at you instantly is that this blue line here is showing that the storage in the upmost layers was by far the highest. We were seeing far and above anything below. Somewhere on the order of a max of 8 milligrams of nitrous oxide per meter squared, and this is an average of all four replicates. There's still substantial storage in the lower depths, just nowhere near on the same order of what we were seeing in the upmost surface layer. So if we add all of those together, we'll now get what is the blue line here, so the total storage per meter squared in the gas phase. Now using Henry's law modified for closed systems, we can calculate the green line, which is the aqueous storage, add those two together, and then we get the total storage of both phases, the red line, and now we're dealing with around 25 milligrams of nitrous oxide per meter square at a maximum. So a substantial amount of storage in the soil profile. So if we now take that total storage and we're going to look at comparing it to the surface flux, the first thing we should look, the surface flux in blue on the right axis, is that we had two what I'm terming events of heightened nitrous oxide emissions around day 76, 77, and between days 80 and 90. what if you see here is that these emissions were not nearly as heightened as other people have found, nowhere near the hundreds of times the annual average that other people have reported. And what is another very interesting result is that we can see that this first event, as I term, lines up very well with our highest rate of decrease in storage in the soil profile. So if I can quickly bring your attention now towards day 48, day 49, we're going to look at what caused this buildup to occur, because from late 2010 to early 2011, we didn't see any buildup of nitrous oxide in the profile, and it was right after this is when we started to see the buildup occurring. So we're going to do, to look at that, we're going to zoom in on days 45 to 65, so February 14th to March 6th. And now we have air temperature on the left in red, against snow depth, and you'll see that on days 48, 49, we had warm conditions. We lost all of the snowpack, which was around 25 centimeters, and we were having actually minor thawing at the surface layer, so we had all that snow turn into water and saturate the surface layer, and then now days 50, 51, the temperatures dropped right back down, and we had a very rapid freeze, creating an ice cap at the surface, and it is after that event that we begin to see this buildup occur. So ideal conditions for the storage of nitrous oxide in the soil profile. So moving on now, we're going to look at the release of nitrous oxide, specifically looking at days 70 to 95. That's March 11th to April 5th, 2011. And now we have zoomed in on a graph I showed you before. So we have the total storage on the left, surface flux on the right. And again, here you can see a good agreement between the highest rate of decrease in the soil storage and the first event of heightened flux. However, curiously, the second event, which is both higher in magnitude and sustained over a longer duration, is occurring during a time when there is not nearly the same amount of change in the storage, indicating that perhaps this was not due to the release of storage. Here I have overlaid this graph now with red and blue, which is indicating what the soil conditions were like. So from day 71 to 82, we had thawing conditions. Starting at 71, the snowpack began to decrease, and specifically on 76 to 77, when we saw the highest rate of flux in the first event, we had very intense thaw. We lost the soil thawed right through, and that continued through to days 82, when there was a change and temperatures returned back well below zero and stayed there for just over a week. And curiously, it was during this time that we had the second event and the greater event. However, what is worth mentioning is that during this blue time, An area, a time of cold, we had a snowpack build up again, which was very likely insulating the profile, and there could have been potential for warm conditions in the surface layer and the production of nitrous oxide. Now, if you move on to days 91 to 95, we're seeing a secondary thaw occurring. However, by this time, the heightened flux emissions had already ended, and they had returned back to background levels. So if we try to put some numbers behind this, if we quickly look at, say, days 74 to 79, the change in storage, or the loss of storage, was 2.8 milligrams of nitrous oxide per meter squared per day. And the average surface flux over that time was only 0.52 milligrams of nitrous oxide per meter squared per day, or about 20% of what the change in storage was. And the maximum was only 1.09. So to quickly summarize these findings, despite ideal conditions for nitrous oxide storage and for the buildup of nitrous oxide, only minor increases in the surface flux were noticed at thaw. We also saw that at the onset of soil thaw, nitrous oxide storage depletes rapidly, the timing of which suggests this importance of physical release as it lined up well with decrease in storage, specifically at the early stages of thaw. However, the disconnect between their magnitudes would be evidence for the importance of sinks to soil nitrous oxide storage at thaw. Specifically, perhaps there may be downwards transport, or there may be further reduction to N2. In terms of further work, I'm going to continue the comparison of changes in storage and time to the surface flux, as well as compare changes in storage in between layers to see if we can see movement of nitrous oxide through the profile. And at that, I'd like to thank you all for your attention. It is.
How did you make those separate estimates from your TDR?
Okay, so we were taking bulk density samples. So
that was prior to onset freezing in the fall?
It was. And at a point, we had to determine when, from the weather data and from the TDR measurements, when the it was likely that the ice had completely thawed. And from that point on, we would say it was liquid water, no more ice. And before that, we would use the physical samples to say and find the difference between the two and do the ratio of the density of ice to water to determine what portion was ice and what portion was liquid water.
Did you see any evidence of frosting?
In my probe? Not significantly, no. There was actually surprising agreement between all four replicates. Some of the soil gas probes were notably lower than the others, but you know that denitrification is a very heterogeneity, or there's a lot of heterogeneity in the soil, and where denitrification is occurring, that was expected. So it did not seem like frosty have really created a big issue for us, at least this winter. I mean, it changes every year.
Okay.